this week I read about two particular events which caught my attention, and I would say to a certain extent, as strange as it might sound after I describe them, they are monumental and truly exceptional in the world of backstabbing and mudslinging politics. 1 week away from the biggest election in the world, the superpower of the world, the United States, before people go to the election, to the polls, both candidates are diligently trying to convince people to vote for them, have invested so much effort, time, money, and Barack Obama decided to take 2 days off in the heat of his campaign to go to Hawaii to visit his grandmother, who is deathly ill, who lays upon her deathbed. Perhaps this is his last chance that he'll have to see his grandmother alive. And he took 2 days off in the heart and the heat of this prevalent campaign. He decided that it was important for him to see his grandmother before she passed on. And I have to say, to me, this was tremendously commendable. Tzipi Livni, in Israeli politics, was unable to form a government. Now, unfortunately, there is no question in the fact that she could not form the government, that the call went out by Peres that there would be a new election in Eretz Yisrael, a new election for prime minister, a new Knesset election, which would undoubtedly cost a tremendous amount of money to the Israeli economy, money which we do not have, money which we cannot afford. But what's interesting is that Livni, in describing the fact that she could not form a government, she explained that she was not prepared to cave in or to succumb to what she called bizarre politics, B-A-Z-A-A-R. She was not interested in conducting these backdoor negotiations with various parties who she felt were not necessarily interested primarily in the greatness of the country and the future of the country, but primarily interested in their own affairs. And therefore she said explicitly that she would not give in to the demands of Shas, particularly under such an economic climate. Their demands for their particular constituency, she felt, was unfair and certainly was biased with regards to the climate of the rest of the country. And it's interesting, not only that, but Livni, in her attempt to put together a government, she hired high-powered lawyers, some of the best lawyers in the country, in Eretz Yisrael, to conduct those negotiations in order to put together the government. Something which is very strange to us in Eretz Yisrael, because what she basically did was, she called upon the most qualified people to get the job done, or at least what she thought would be the most qualified people to get the job done in order to form the government. And this is strange in Israeli politics, in the Israeli world, because rarely do we see in the political agenda, in the arena of the Israeli political scene, that politicians call upon the most qualified man, or what they believe is the most qualified power, in order to get things done. Now, one might argue, both in terms of Obama and in terms of Livni, that each of them had ulterior motives. Perhaps Barack Obama was looking for the sympathetic vote, that people should see, oh, here's a man who's a family man, I can relate to him, look how he sacrifices, takes time off to visit his grandmother. And one might say that the truth is, Livni would have done anything to become prime minister. And maybe in the background of things that we don't necessarily see in front of us, perhaps she was prepared to sell her body and soul for the sake of forming a government. But in the end it didn't work out, and therefore she said that she would not succumb to bizarre politics. However, the very fact that both Obama demonstrated this perhaps tactic, the very fact that Livni found herself saying that her reasons for demonstrating that she could not put together a government was the fact that she would not give in or succumb to bargaining or unfair reasoning, perhaps that itself demonstrates a certain sense of moral consciousness that can exist even within the sleazy political arena that we are so accustomed to. Now, I'm not saying that I advocate voting for either one of these candidates in their respective countries. I would never consider making such a statement, considering the millions of listeners who tune in on a weekly basis to the Sleepless Sermon. I would never place myself in such an uncompromising situation. But I have to admit that I myself found it rather, if not inspiring, at the very least refreshing, that in the untouchable world of sleazy politics, there seemed to have been a glint of human decency by these two particular politicians. We, the Jewish people, are expected to achieve more, particularly when it comes to human decency, to morality, to instilling the concept of ethics in the world that we know. However, what we have to recognize is that the world undoubtedly is predicated upon these foundations and upon these very basic, what appears to be, basic principles. In Perek Vav, Pasuk Yud Gimel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that He is going to destroy the world after realizing Vatimalei Haaretz Chamas. The world was filled with Chamas, says the Ramban, Hu HaGezel VeHaOshek. This is thievery, pillaging, which was unacceptable. Venatan Noach Lenoach Hatam Bechamas V'lo Hizkir Hishchatat Haaretz. Ki Chamas Hu Achet Hayadua VaHamefursam, says the Ramban. Chamas is a sin, a transgression, which is known, which is perhaps world-renowned, which is recognizable and public. It is obvious. V'raboteinu amru, me'atah mipnei shehi mitzvah muskelet. It is a mitzvah. This chamas, this type of behavior, is a mitzvah, has to do with muskelet, from the seichel. In other words, it's what we call a mitzvah sichlit. The ability to have common basic knowledge in understanding and appreciating that there has to be common human decency. The Torah does not need to explicitly state every single mode of behavior that's expected from us, particularly when it comes to just being a decent person. Ein lahem batzorech lenavi lahazhir, says the Ramban. There is no need for a prophet to state in all of the details what exactly it means, chamas, not to behave with proper code of behavior. Va'od shehu ra lashamayim v'labriot. Here the Ramban says something which at first glance would seem rather strange. Not only that, but chamas, behaving in such a fashion with thievery, is bad and wicked both to the Shamayim, both to the heavens above, as well as Labriot, to the creations below. And we would ask ourselves, how is this? I can understand clearly how thievery and how robbery and how theft can be detrimental to my fellow man. But how exactly is it Ra LaShamayim? How does it affect the heavens above? And the answer is based on Rabbeinu Bachye. The Rabbeinu Bachye says, "B'mitzvah shel seichel ein shum viturim." There are no excuses when it comes to mitzvot by which we are meant to dictate our behavior based on our seichel, based on common knowledge. "Shehaseichel hu mitzvah shel teva." The mitzvah of seichel, of human decency, of basic knowledge, is innate in man's nature. And when he does not use that code of behavior, he becomes abusive and he completely destroys that which is decent in his very nature, in his very essence.
V'hu mi'anhagat ha-borei al yedei shaliach.
Not only that, but the issue of behaving decently, we serve as shlichim, as messengers of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kiviyachol, when we uphold that code of behavior. Ve'al kein kesh'adam over ha-mitzvat ha-seichel. Therefore, al kein, referring back to last week's sermon with regards to Bereshit, for this purpose, when we transgress that code of decency, ne'enash taketh, we are immediately punished. Shezu gdeira shemida tadin she'ein ba shum biturim. For this is a boundary that can absolutely not be crossed. Once it is crossed, God kiviyachol sees the need to punish man immediately, without warning, because that is a point of no return. And therefore, when the world transgressed Hamas, when they immersed themselves and lost the code of basic human behavior, at that point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to destroy the world. Human decency, compassion, is absolutely intertwined with the effects that it has on us in our ideology and in our ideological commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I've said a number of times that the way man discovers God is through discovering man. When we understand what it means or how to behave ben adam l'chavero, then we can appreciate what it means ben adam l'makom, and of course, vice versa, the opposite obviously holds true as well. When we are not morally sound with one another, then we cannot possibly hope to find the essence of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu represents. And perhaps this is precisely why Noach is chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All of us are familiar with the famous machloket, whether Noach ish tzadik tamim haya bedorotav, whether Noach really was righteous in his generation, but had he lived in the generation of Avram, he would not have achieved such spiritual lofty heights. But perhaps in Noach's generation, it was enough for what he did. And what did he do? In Perek Vav Pasuk Yud, the Torah says, Ish tzadik tamim haya bedorotav. What kind of righteous person was he in his generation? Immediately following, Vayoled Noach Shlosha Banim. Noach gives birth to three children, three sons. In other words, perhaps for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in that generation, what was called for was a person who was a family man. Noach marries. Noach pursues a meaningful relationship. Noach pursues companionship for the sake of building and constructing children, a family, the basics of what it means, the institution towards human camaraderie for the sake of finding a greater purpose, i.e. HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. And that is precisely why Noach was chosen. This is revealed as well, Rabotai, in Perek Vav Pasuk Yutet. Umikol achai mikol basar, shnayim mikol tavi el ateva, lachayot itach zachar unekeva yihiyu. Noach is instructed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go out. Tavi el hateva lachayot itach. The Ramban explains that undoubtedly many of the animals which would survive the flood inside the teva, in the ark, they came by their own volition. They arrived at the ark. However, the animals which would not survive, which would be used as sacrifices after following the flood, for the sake of showing hakarat atov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the behemot teharot, the pure animals which would be used for karbanot, those did not show up to the teva by themselves. Noah had to go out and hunt them
and bring them in to the Teva. Why is this? Says the Ramban as follows. Tzivahu shiyitasek v'yazor otam b'chnisatam b'teva v'yishtadel bahem shiyichyu kasher yishtadel b'nafsho. Listen carefully to what that means. HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded Noach to involve himself, to busy himself with bringing or escorting the animals into the Teva. Not only that, but dealing with the lives of the animals for the sake, or just as he would yishtadel b'nafsho, much like he would be expected to treat himself, his peers, and his family. That is precisely the same expectation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had with regards to Noach, to the livestock, to the animals, and the Teva as well. The Ramban points out that the Teva, how could it possibly have held so many animals? How could it have been such a large edifice? Nothing's large enough to hold such a feat. The Ramban says it was miraculous. The Teva expanded. Aye, if that's the case, says the Ramban, why didn't Noach build a small Teva and then rely upon the miracle that inevitably it would expand no matter how many animals he would fill in? No. Says the Ramban, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Noach to appreciate that man has to be involved in what's called hishtadlut. Man has to put and invest his efforts in this world, and only then do miracles transpire. Only after man demonstrates that this is his desire, that he's willing to invest his efforts and his earnestness for the sake of construction, only then does the construction in all of its miraculousness reveal itself. And therefore, says the Ramban, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Noach to make the effort to escort the animals into the Teva, to build a large Teva, and ultimately towards what was the effort geared? To treating the animals decently. Kasher yishtadel b'nafsho. Says the Perush and the Ramban, Kemo sheyitnaheg ha'adam atzmo, much like man would treat himself, V'hu yesod ha'mitzvah shel ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, just as we expect to treat ourselves with such sensitivity that we would not hurt someone, much like we would not hurt ourselves, or that we would certainly demonstrate love, sensitivity toward the other, as we would expect for ourselves. Kemo kein, as such, nitzaveh Noach al kol hachayot. So too Noach was expected to treat the animals in the Teva. The world was restored, my friends, not based on tzidkus, not based on righteousness, not even based on chokhmah, on brilliance. Noach did not know shas b'al peh. The world was restored on the premise of family, on the efforts which would be made towards human decency, on the efforts to uphold morality. And ultimately, what we have to recognize is that these are the foundations that remain the mainstay, both of spiritual relevance and of spiritual revelation. Shabbat Shalom.